Well, TK, it seems like the cricket world is happy now. The Ashes is going to go ahead. The tour of Bangladesh is coming up very soon. The Big Bash will go through the summer. The girls are going to get some money, which is great to see.
Some money.
A lot of money.
They're the big winners. There's no doubt. If there's a big winners that came out of the MOU, it's the females. And good luck to them.
They're playing some. They're playing some good stuff. They missed out on the World Cup just only a couple of weeks ago. But joining us now is Chris Barrett, Sky Sports cricket expert. And Chris, thumbs up for the new deal. Who won, who lost out of the whole pay dispute?
Morning, guys. Well, I think we all win because we don't have to hear about it anymore for a start. But
hallelujah to that.
Particularly journos and radio hosts having to talk about it every day. But look, I think it's pretty unequivocal that the players got what they want, didn't they? I mean, James Sutherland at that press conference didn't even really disguise that. I mean, he sort of demonstrated that Cricket Australia had achieved some great outcomes with grassroots cricket. And let's not forget that they were the ones that proposed very high pay rises for the women's game as well. So, you know, that's something that's certainly come up in their favour. But, you know, look, I know that Alistair Nicholson, his counterpart at the ACA, and David Warner, even when he was asked on TV, have been quite diplomatic about when asked, you know, did the players win the war, et cetera. But you only had to see with the players' union press release on the day to know what they all really thought. They issued a list of objectives that they'd had at the start of the dispute, and beside it in capital letters with a green stamp had achieved the word achieved next to every one of them. So I think there's no doubt in their mind that they prevailed. And look, it's pretty obvious that CA pushed it to the limit. I don't know if they did that deliberately beyond the June 30 deadline, but with the impending threat of test tours and very important one-day tours of India coming up, they've effectively tapped out and decided to, you know, call a peace treaty, I suppose.
It's funny because it doesn't mean it was a good result. It was a good result for the players because the players were always going to win because there's 200 of them and we need them. We particularly need the elite 12. So they were always going to win. It was just a matter of how they won. But I want one thing answered, if possible, Chris. I hear a lot about this grassroots, 25 million, 30 million. Has anybody seen how the grassroots will benefit?
No. I mean,
that's what I want to see.
The carve-up or anything. But
yeah, I want to see what the carve-up is because I've just registered a boy for junior cricket and I can't see anything coming back into the pocket.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you're going to get a free kid out of that, but I'm not sure they've looked at it that forensically, TK, but look, it can't be a loser out of it. It's more money going into grassroots cricket than there has been before. Cricket Australia, this was a real victory. They're having a review of all of their administrative costs, and they're vowing to spend 10 to 20 million a year on the savings from that department towards grassroots cricket. So, you know, I think in many respects, you know, that's a pretty good gesture as well.
As long as it gets to the grassroots is my point, Chris.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, you may be right in your scepticism, and there's no oversight body here that ensures that happens. But I think you have to trust that a not-for-profit organisation like Cricket Australia is going to direct those funds appropriately. I mean, they're charged with jurisdiction, not just over the elite teams, but the development of the game and juniors as well. And I think they've done a pretty good job on that front. I mean, cricket is a very high participation sport in this country. So,
yeah, but we pay to participate.
What's that, sorry?
We pay to participate. They don't throw the game on.
No, that's right.
So I don't.
Well, and hopefully those fees will be subsidised in the future, I suppose. And because, you know, it does cost too much to register your kid for junior cricket and in other sports as well. You know, it's a lot out of the hip pocket to be paying several hundred dollars a year in registration fees. I haven't got any kids up to cricket age yet, but so I don't know what the fees are. But you know,
they're as expensive as any card. They are as expensive. If not, I would say, just on my personal experience, they're the most expensive code to be involved with.
Well, they'll find out pretty quickly anyhow, because the wrath of the supporters, they'll make noises about it as well. You're right, they're doing the other codes. But we move on. The squads have been announced for, there's the Bangladesh tour coming up, obviously. Mitchell Swepson gets a start, and Jackson Bird also called in. Good move from your call?
Yeah, I think Jackson Bird was obvious, wasn't he? And Mitchell Swepson, they'd shown their hand by taking him to India, and they obviously see him as a player of the future. I don't really see that he'll play over there, but I would have thought that Agar will combine with Nathan Lyon. I mean, I still can't wrap my head around how Steve O'Keefe's missed out on that squad. I understand that he played up at an awards night, but he was bowled superbly in India. So I still don't know how that he's had a line put through him, basically for his international career now, as a result of that. But moving on, I think they'll probably play the three quicks over there, Cummins, Hazelwood and Bird, with a couple of the spinners, Lyon and Agar, and then go with a bit of a hybrid batting order where you'd have Maxwell at five, Wade at six, Agar at seven, and then Cummins at eight. I mean, that's still a handy batting lineup. I mean, there is a link to the pay dispute with this tour. I mean, a number of these players that are on this squad were meant to go on that Australia A tour to South Africa that got abandoned. So we will, see if there's some consequences from that protracted pay dispute. If some of those guys, the likes of Maxwell, the likes of Khawaja, Bird, Swepson, do underperform in this series, and whether we can point the finger back at that. At that tour that was cancelled, it'll be interesting to see.
Well, you mentioned about Swepson. If he's not going to get a start, why take him?
Warney likes him.
Warney? Influence?
Warney does like him a lot. I mean, he's a leg spinner with a bit of talent. So, Warney's crying out for one of them to get picked, and so is the rest of the country, I suppose. It's sort of that post-Warn syndrome that we've been in for 10 years. He may get a start somewhere along the line there. There's only two tests in a quick 2-day tour match. It's a very quick tour. They're pretty keen on taking these guys in a developmental aspect as well. I mean, Agar has been on a couple of tours simply as a development player, really. He was meant to go on that first Ashes tour as a development player, and suddenly they picked him. So you do never know. But I'd expect that Agar would be picked alongside Lyon, simply because of the makeup of that side as well. They're going to need the batting depth. Bangladesh are pretty handy in their own conditions. They won a test match against England last year and drew that series. So Australia, who really don't, have a lot of runs under their belt lately, most of them haven't played. Peter Hanscom's just come back from Yorkshire, so he's in pretty good touch. If they're under strength, they could be vulnerable.
Just a quick one, mate. Dave Warner says he can still captain Australia despite being outspoken regarding the pay dispute. He regrets it was played out in the media, although he kept tweeting to his $1.28 million followers.
Sure he can. I mean, look, how soon is he going to be Australian captain anyway? I mean, Steve Smith's only 28, so, barring injury or whatever, Steve Smith's going to be captain a hell of a long time. And I think if there was a fill-in situation, if Smith was unavailable for a test match, then the vice-captain would obviously be the guy to stand in on a temporary basis, and that's Warner. I don't have a problem with the way Warner went about it. I think they actually bounced off each other quite well, and I was interested that Warner said yesterday on the telly that he had spoken about that with Smith. You be the statesman-like figure behind the scenes, because obviously a captain has different interests, pulling at him from both ways. He's employed by the board, but he's also, he's also the representative of the players. Whereas Warner could go rogue, for want of a better word, or at least get out there on the front foot and be the mouthpiece for them on the public stage. And Warner's tailor made for that as well. He doesn't mind getting out there and having a go. So yeah, I thought he played it all right. I'm sure there's plenty at Cricket Australia that were happy with it, but who knows, how many of them will be around in a number of years' time if he is a candidate to be captain.
Yeah, exactly right. It's like he went out to bat, wasn't it, Chris? Chris, thanks for your time this morning on all things cricket, and we're looking forward to these boys getting back out in the pitch.
Thanks, guys.
Chris Barrett there, Sky Sports cricket expert. And it's interesting, though, TK, because you talk about good cop, bad cop. And Smith has to go in there and then talk to Sutherland, talk to Howard, and make sure things are appeased in that situation there. Because, in effect, they're getting paid by these guys, so that someone's got to toe the party line. And Dave Warner, enough to just throw the willow a little bit on and off the field.
He's the attack dog, isn't it? Boom, crash, wallop, on and off the field.
I like that.
For Dave Warner, you could market that. 13, 53, 53.